You might like to turn in your Bible as we open our Sunday school time to Hebrews and chapter 11. As we've been looking at Hebrews, and especially chapter 11, we are to be reminded of the fact that God is very, very active. He isn't passive. You don't go to some temple somewhere and you'll find an image and that's it. God is a very present God and very active, involved in his management of all of his creation for his glory and his honor. Therefore, so the book of Hebrews is to stimulate the believing heart to exercise the outworking of God's saving grace, God's will for the life, for the country, for the world. So in Hebrews chapter 11, you'll remember, the lead into chapter 11, just in case, chapter 10, verse 38, now the just shall live by faith. If any man draw back, my soul shall have no pleasure in him. Sliding over to chapter 11, verse 5. What did Enoch do that God noted in all the different things to illustrate? It was about what did Enoch do? He walked with God, and in particular, you note the verb, and the end of verse 5, that he pleased God. It pleased God. God was blessed, as it were, with Enoch. Leading to the next statement, which you know, verse 6, without faith, it is impossible to please him. There's your word. 4, he that cometh to God must believe that he is, and that is a rewarder, he is a rewarder, a payer in full of them that diligently seek him. He pays. It pays. Seek God with all your heart, and you'll find him. Now, and so then he gives encouragement to the believing heart. Remember now the temple is still up when Hebrews is written, so some of the Jews would be still going to the temple. After 70 A.D., there is no more temple. It's Titus destroyed it. So here they are going, there's Judaism active, and he's trying to encourage the heart to be looking to God, thanking God, trusting God. So here's all these examples. To show you different ways different people at different times please God by doing what? Just believing him. Believing and following through, like Noah, like each one. Noah built the ark, and Abraham didn't know where he was going, but he was going to trust God. So when we came to Hebrews chapter 11, in our little exercise, we came to chapter 11 and in verse 21. And we share together that by faith, Jacob, when he was dying, and remember here, Jacob's dying, and Joseph's going to be dying. And verse 21, by faith, Jacob, when he was dying, blessed both the sons of Joseph and worshipped, leaning upon the top of his staff. Now, so that's what he did. He was dying, and he did something, and he blessed. Now, blessing in itself would not necessarily be special, but this time it's special. Why is it special? Because Jacob was influenced by the Spirit of God in his blessing. So, and here you'll note in verse 21, and worshipped leaning upon the top of his staff. Now, in the, you're going to see it in the Genesis. You're going to see it translated the word bed, B-E-D. And B-E-D and S-T-A-F-F, staff, are the same Hebrew letters. Think of Hebrew without the vowels. So when you put the vowels down, that's how you distinguish words. So when you're reading, you're going to read staff slash bed. Now, the average bed is they translated bed. The average bed, Jacob isn't going to lean in his bed to bless him. You'd have to think of a bed, a fancy bed like in Newport or something, with the big poles and everything. His bed's a very simple bed. And so it's the word staff, bed, staff. You just need to know that. And in what you're reading in chapter 11 and verse 21 is quoted from the Septuagint, which has staff. So you need that. Just a vowel. Little vowel changes the word. Now, having said that, and keeping that in mind, if you can, I'll go over, if you can, O2 Genesis, little background, to see why the blessing. And in Genesis, and chapter 48. In Genesis chapter 48. Now remember, here's chapter 48 and picking up in verse 5. And now thy two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, which were born unto thee in the land of Egypt, before I came unto thee into Egypt, are mine, as Reuben and Simeon, they are mine. And thy issue, etc. So, Reuben, remember, is the firstborn of all the 12 sons. Reuben is the firstborn. The firstborn has the right to the double portion. That's the way it is in the family. The oldest took over the place of the father, and thus gets the double portion. He has the double responsibility for the family. So here's Reuben, but Reuben is going to goof, and Reuben is going to go and gets in trouble, and you'll see it, you weren't far away to see it, over to chapter 49, you'll see the problem, chapter 49, and in verse 4. This is about Reuben now. I'll read verse 3. Reuben, thou art my firstborn, my might, and the beginning of my strength, the excellency of dignity, and the excellency of power. Unstable as water, thou shalt not excel, because thou wentest up to thy father's bed, then defileth thou it. He went up to my couch. So Reuben did a bad thing, not a good thing, and he's punished for it. He loses his firstborn double portion position. Just keep that in mind. Now, back over to chapter 48. And in chapter 48 and verse 11 now. Now, Israel slash Jacob, that is Jacob's name, Israel. 48, verse 11. And Israel said unto Joseph, I had not thought to see thy face, and lo, God hath showed me also thy seed. In other words, Jacob comes, he never thought he'd see Joseph again. He sees Joseph, and Joseph is there. And so he's real happy. Verse 12. Joseph brought them though God hath showed me thy seed. So Joseph had two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh. He had two sons. And he brought his two little children out. And verse 12. And Joseph brought them out from between his knees. Now when the two children came out, Jacob, Israel, he opens his legs, as it were, and receives them between his legs as he's sitting there. He takes them between himself, including them in the blessing. And verse 12. And Joseph brought them out from between his knees. So Joseph takes them out from Jacob. And he bowed himself with his face to the earth. And Joseph took them both, Ephraim, in his right hand toward Israel's left hand, and Manasseh in his left hand towards Israel's right hand, and brought them near unto him. And Israel stretched out his right hand and laid it upon Ephraim's head, who was the younger. Ephraim's the younger, Manasseh's the oldest. Double portion, who's the older? Manasseh's the oldest. Who gets the double portion? Who has the order in rank, right? Manasseh does. That's what he does. Just like Esau, we shared. Esau is the firstborn. He has the double portion we shared last time. He sold his birthright. He didn't care about his being the firstborn. And he lost his blessing. He lost both. He lost them. He treated them as nothing, and thus he has nothing. Now, here they are coming out, and Joseph presents his Ephraim and Manasseh to the proper hands of Israel, Jacob. And I'll read verse 14 again, case. And Israel stretched out his right hand and laid it upon Ephraim's head, who was the younger, and his left hand upon Manasseh's head, guiding his hands wittingly, for Manasseh was the firstborn. He gets double portion. He's the one you mark who gets the double portion. Now, in doing so, you have to think of it. Here's the two children, and in front of him, and he puts his hands out. But he doesn't put his hands out like that to bless them. Joseph lined him up to put his hands out like this. But Jacob didn't do that. What did he do? He crossed his hands, and the right hand went over to Ephraim, and the left hand went over to Manasseh. What are you doing? He's the firstborn. Manasseh gets the double portion, and you're giving it to Ephraim. What are you doing? See, hang on. In verse 15, and he blessed Joseph and said, God, before whom my fathers Abraham and Isaac did walk, the God which fed me all my life long unto this day, God kept Jacob in a wonderful way. And the angel which redeemed me from all evil, bless the lads, and let my name be named on them, and the name of my fathers Abraham and Isaac, and let them grow into a multitude in the midst of the earth. And wonderful blessing, Abraham, Isaac, and now Jacob, handing on the line as God has promised to Abraham. Verse 17. And when Joseph saw that his father laid his right hand upon the head of Ephraim, and it displeased him, and he held up his father's hand, to remove it from Ephraim's head unto Manasseh's head. He said, Dad, let me help you see. You got your hands crossed. You got to uncross them and put them on each of my children. And verse 18, and Joseph said unto his father, not so, my father, for this is the firstborn. but my right hand, put my right hand upon his head. And his father refused and said, I know it, my son, I know it. He also shall become a people. He also shall be great, but truly his younger brother shall be greater. Ephraim will be more pronounced in power and position than Manasseh will. And therefore, he blessed, and they saying, he shall, verse 20, and he shall, and in thee shall Israel be blessed, saying, God make thee as Ephraim and as Manasseh. And he set Ephraim before Manasseh. And Israel said unto Joseph, behold, I die, but God shall be with you and bring you again into the land of your fathers. Moreover, I have given to thee one portion above thy brethren, which I took out of the hand of Aaron, of the Amorite, with my sword and with my bow. Now remember now, here's the 12 tribes, think of your map of Palestine. The 12 tribes are there all over. Here's Ephraim and Manasseh, large pieces of Manasseh especially, piece of property. And in the process, a process of all that, Reuben's a piece of property. But he lost the right because of his action. He lost the right to be the firstborn and have a double portion. You also keep in mind, here's the 12 tribes. What do you know about the 12 tribes if you look at the map? As you look at the map, what tribe is missing? Levi. Levi is not there. Levi is the priestly tribe. They have a special place with God. They don't have a piece of property. Levites don't particularly, like the other tribes. Reuben lost the right to have a double portion. Joseph is given the right, so that Joseph has a right. Joseph's piece of property, Ephraim, and Manasseh's piece of property, Reuben. They take over. The two sons, in other words, Joseph has a double portion, and so they get the extra piece of property that Reuben would have had. So here we are looking, and here's the 12 tribes, and Levi, and Ephraim and Manasseh are two of the tribes. Now, having said that, and Joseph's dying, so now, keeping that in mind, and while you're here, over to chapter 50. And in chapter 50 of Genesis, and you will note, picking up, if I may, in verse 13. For his sons carried him, I got to slide over to verse 7 so you get a little context. And Joseph went up to bury, Jacob dies. Jacob's going to die, Jacob dies. Then what's another thing about, what do you guys believe? We believe God has a wonderful future based on the promised land, based on the wonderful places we shared in Hebrews 11. God has a city, and he's the builder and maker of it. We're looking for that city out from heaven. That's what, we're just pilgrims on planet Earth. We're strangers. We live in tents. We aren't interested in locking down the city. We live in tents. We're headed for God's wonderful future. Hang on to that. Now, so chapter 13. For the sons carried him, verse 7, excuse me, I didn't mean to do that. Verse 7, Joseph went up to bury his father, and with whom and with him went up all the servants of Pharaoh and the elders of his house and all the elders of the land of Egypt. So they took a trip to Egypt, back to the land from Egypt. And they did that. They're going to bury them. Verse 13. For his sons carried him into the land of Canaan and buried him in the cave of the field of Machpelah, which Abraham bought with the field for a possession of a burial place of Ephron the Hittite. He bought it from Ephron the Hittite before Mamre. So Abraham had made provision for all of them to be buried. Where does Jacob say? He's in Egypt. He said, I'm going to die. I want to be buried in my burial plot in the land, not in Egypt. I want to be buried in the land where I belong. I am Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. He's part of the team. He belongs there. So where are you gonna, what did you do, Joseph? You wanted and you took a whole trip buried him. Where? In the land, in the place that they were set apart for him. Now, having said that, and while you're still here, here's Joseph. And sliding over, if I can, in chapter 50, picking up, please, in verse 24. And Joseph said unto his brethren, I die, and God will surely visit you and bring you out of this land into the land which he sware to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. Now, so what are you saying, Joseph? Joseph says to his family, I'm going to die, and I want you to know that you're going to go to the land that God has set apart for you in Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. In other words, you're going to go back to where you belong. You don't belong in Egypt. You belong in the land of Palestine as a testimony to all the nations. So you're going to go back there. Now, and they're all looking at each other. And they've got just a little less, I figure he's 17 years, 400 years. It's actually, if you do subtract and stuff, Joseph says to them, you're going to go back to the land. And they look at each other. 359 years from now. 359 years from now, you're going back. He believed God. He just believed God. You're going to go back. But they don't see going back, and they're all going to die. but it's going to end back in the land. And Joseph took an oath of the children of Israel, saying, now, Joseph, how convinced are you of this? Well, I'm going to die, verse 25. And Joseph took an oath of the children of Israel, saying, God will surely visit you, and you shall carry up my bones from hence. Because after all, they're going to be pretty bony after all that time. So you got to understand. So Joseph died, being 110 years old, and they embalmed him, and he was put in a coffin in Egypt. That isn't where he belongs. He said, you're going to bury me, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. I want to go back home. It's to be 360, whatever years, 359 years. You're going to go back. Make sure I go back. Now, having said that, Exodus chapter 13. Exodus in chapter 13. And picking up in verse, chapter 13, verse 19. And Moses took 13:19. And Moses took the bones of Joseph with him, when he had straitly sworn, for he had straitly sworn the children of Israel, saying, God will surely visit you, and you shall carry up my bones away hence with you. So that's what he did. So Moses, here's the box, where they keep the box. They kept the box over there where the bones kept them for 359 years, kept them there to take them. And they're going to take him back to the land. That's where he's going to go, in his most wonderful way. Joshua, chapter 24. All these people are just believing God. That's what they're doing. Joshua, chapter 24. And picking up, please, chapter 24, and you'll catch it, if I can, in verse 32. 24 and 32. And the bones of Joseph, which the children of Israel brought up out of Egypt, buried they in Shechem when they crossed the Jordan after 40 more years, in a parcel of ground which Jacob bought of the sons of Hamor, the father of Shechem, 400 pieces of silver, and it became the inheritance of the children of Joseph. Now, so what? God, what's so wonderful? They believe in God, and they're looking, always governed by the future. How is it going to go? And they believed God. There's nothing to see at the moment, but they believed God. What were they doing? By faith, they were honoring God's wonderful plan and purpose in his wonderful, wonderful way for their lives. And they believed. They honored God. Their heart and mind was governed for us. We're looking for his soon, imminent coming. We're looking. It governs when we eat at breakfast, governs when we go to work, governs when we brush our teeth, governs us. We're looking. What do you know from 1 John 3 in that? You'll please God. You that are looking for me will please me. You're looking for me. Jacob and Joseph believed, and they were looking. That's what they were doing. Now, back over to Hebrews. So in chapter 11 again, I'll read verse, so you can see the connections by 21. By faith, Jacob, when he was dying, blessed both the sons of Joseph and worshiped leaning upon top of his staff. We just did that in Genesis. By faith, Joseph, when he died, made mention of the departing of the children of Israel and gave commandment concerning his bones. That's what he did. That's what they did. God honored. God was paying attention. They were paying attention to God. God was paying attention to them. So now, having said that, you now move in verse 23. And in verse 23, you pick up Moses. Now, here's Moses. And when he was born, was hid 3 months of his parents, because they saw he was a proper child, and they were not afraid of the king's commandments. Now the parents are part of the blessed. The parents are blessed. Now it's about Joseph, but the parents are blessed. The parents are noted for their faith. They believed God. They believed God. Hang on. Now, having said that little bit, and keeping that in mind, if I can, I'll go over, if you can, to Exodus. Exodus chapter 1. And in Exodus chapter 1, you will note, going if I can, chapter 1, verse 16. And he said, this is the king of Egypt. And the midwives, remember now, Israel was, they were doing everything, and Israel was becoming very, very, very large as a population. They were growing, ready, in all these 359 years. They're growing, they're developing. Large, lots of people. And so therefore, here's the Pharaoh. And the Pharaoh comes along, king of Egypt, and we can't have them getting that many because they're going to outnumber us pretty soon. So we can't do that. We can't have, that's too big a group of people to have to control. So therefore, Verse 15, the king of Israel spake to the Hebrew midwives, of which the name of one was Shiphthra, and the name of the other Puah. And he said, When do ye the office of the midwife to the Hebrew women? See then that upon the stools, upon the stools, if it be a son, then you shall kill him. But if it be a daughter, he shall let him live. But the midwives feared God and did not as the king of Egypt commanded them, but saved the men children alive. And the king of Egypt called the midwives and said unto them, why have you done this thing and have saved the men children alive? And the midwives said unto Pharaoh, because the Hebrew women are not as the Egyptian women, for they are lively and are delivered ere the midwives come. In other words, before we could get to the hospital, they had the baby. So what can we do? We never see the baby. We never see it. Good excuse. Verse 19. And the midwives said unto Pharaoh, because the Hebrew women are not as the Egyptian women, etc. Verse 20. Therefore God dealt well with the midwives. God blessed them. And the people multiplied and waxed very mighty. And it came to pass, because the midwives feared God, that he made them, houses. And Pharaoh charged all his people, saying, every son that is born he shall cast into the river, and every daughter you shall save alive. So now here's the things to throw them into the river. And in the process of throwing into the river, chapter 2, and there went a man of the house of Levi and took a wife and daughter of Levi. And the woman conceived and bare a son, and when she saw him, that he was goodly, a child, beautiful child, she hid him for 3 months. In other words, instead of throwing him into the river, she hid him so that he couldn't find him and took care of him in the process. Verse 3, and when she could not longer hide him, 3 months passed, she took for him an ark of bulrushes and dubbed it with lime and with pitch, and put the child therein, and she laid it upon the flags or the weeds of the river's bank. And his sister stood afar off to wit what would be done to him. So in other words, the sister goes, Miriam, takes this baby, and takes the baby and puts the baby in the reeds in this little basket made to float, and to put in the weeds to see what happens. So she stood back and watched. Therefore, verse 5, and the daughter of Pharaoh came down to wash herself at the river, and her maidens walked along by the river's side, and when she saw the ark among the flags, weeds, she sent her maid to fetch it. So in other words, that she knows the routine. The Pharaoh's daughter goes to take a shower, whatever, wash her face and whatever. And in the process, the maids wander up and down, and there they say, well, what is this in the weeds? So, in verse 6, and when she had opened it, she saw the child, and behold, that babe wept, and she had compassion on him, and said, this is one of the Hebrew children. Then said the sister to Pharaoh's daughter, in other words, Moses' sister came up and said right off, this is my brother, as it were. She said this to Pharaoh's daughter, shall I, she didn't say brother, because that would have been no good. Because, what's she going to do? Remember, Pharaoh needs someone to nurse the baby, and the sister goes to Pharaoh's daughter and said, I know someone that can nurse the baby. That's the mother, but she don't say that. Shall I go and call to thee a nurse of the Hebrew women, that they may nurse the child for thee? And Pharaoh's daughter said to her, Go. And the maid went and called the child's mother. And the Pharaoh's daughter said unto her, Take this child away and nurse it for me, and I will give thee wages, I'll pay you. In other words, you're going to get paid for taking care of your own baby. They take wages. And the woman took the child and nursed it. And the child grew, and she brought him unto Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. And she became, and she called his name Moses. That's where Moses comes from. Moses, from the daughter. And she said, Because I drew him out of the water. And it came to pass in those days when Moses was grown, he went out unto his brethren. And I got to stop there for that. Now, keeping that in mind, you need to go, what is special about the baby in particular? The baby's a very beautiful baby. All babies are beautiful, I know. There's no babies that aren't beautiful. So all babies are beautiful. So having said that, in the process, but it's a beautiful baby. And in order to catch the significance, God put special, he marked it in a most wonderful way. Hold your finger here. Over to Acts chapter 7. And in Acts chapter 7, Acts chapter 7, and you will note, Acts chapter 7, picking up please, in verse 20, note, and as you read, as you go through your Bible, you will note God, all the events of Genesis may be reflected and said again in some form. God, in giving the pages of the Bible, God gave Genesis and the account we just read. And when it came to Acts, and here's Stephen going and giving the history of Israel, and in the process of the history of Israel, he fills in details. All as you go turn the pages of the Bible, just like you did last time with Esau and Jacob, you don't know. God is going to say things and clarify, help you understand something. So as you see it in Genesis 1, you may see it in 10 other places. It will help you understand. It will help you understand what you read in Genesis 1. It's going to give you information that you never had. Why did that happen? Malachi chapter 1, remember? Jacob have I loved, Esau have I hated. You never know that till you come to Malachi. Here we are looking at Acts chapter 7. And here's the rehearsal of looking at Israel. And in the process, sliding down, if I can, to verse 20. In which time Moses was born, and was exceedingly fair, and nourished up of his father's house 3 months. Now, we just read that in Exodus, right? But in the expression, exceeding fair, beautiful to God, literally, Greek, to God, he's beautiful. He's special. Of all the babies, he's special. He's special. I'm going to take care of him. I mock him. He's special. And the parents of Moses knew. They just knew because they believed in the first place. They didn't care about the wrath of the king. They were going to save the baby anyway. They didn't care. So now, having said that and keeping that in mind, in God's wonderful, wonderful way, in all that he does. So, having said that, back over, while you're here, go a little further. In verse 22. And Moses was learned, you can see it, verse 21. And when he was cast out, Pharaoh's daughter took him up and nourished him for her own son. Now, actually, by way of the mother. Verse 22. And Moses was learned in all the wisdom of Egypt, Egyptians, and he was mighty in words and deeds. And when he was full of 40 years old, it came into his heart to visit his brethren, the children of Israel. And seeing one of them suffer wrong, he defended him and avenged him that was oppressed, and smote the Egyptian. Verse 25, for he supposed his brethren would have understood how that God, by his hand, would deliver them, but they understood not. They didn't understand. So Moses expected, when he did this, without going back there for time's sake, back to Exodus chapter 2, and Moses grew. He grew, back over to Hebrews 11. Sort of have to miss a couple of things, but you got it. You got the idea. And Moses raised in Pharaoh's family the son of Pharaoh's daughter, an adopted son. And he had an awesome position. What would he have known? He would have been raised in every skill and every language and everything possible. He would be highly, highly educated in everything. That's what you would do. Because it could have taken over Pharaoh's place. Highly educated, skilled, a warrior, eloquent, hang on to all of those things, marvelous. But having all of that, picking up now, chapter 11, by faith, verse 23, not afraid of the king's commandment, verse 24, by faith, Moses, when he was come of years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. Now, he refused to become. He was had prominent, high position. He refused. He himself chose not to be in the line of Pharaoh. He chose. In other words, he's an adult. He has all of the education, all of the background, the wonderful position, and he made a choice in his mind, I do not want to be an Egyptian pharaoh. I choose not to be the son of Pharaoh's daughter. He made a choice. Then he made that choice. He made it then as a young man. He made that choice. That's why they're going to say, didn't you guys, when he killed, protected them, the Jews didn't understand. He was chosen to be the deliverer. He had an awesome sense of his awesome position in by his mother's training in that for 3 months, etc. And you'd be surprised what you can learn in 3 months. And someone said, well, you don't remember. That's 3 months. Forget that. Anyway, now, so in the process, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. Choosing rather to suffer the afflictions of the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. That's what he chose. He chose. He made a choice, choosing rather to have a temporary, to have a temporary enjoyment of sin. He chose not to do it. So I could be a Pharaoh and have all kinds of privileges and freedom to do all kinds of things, and then I die. Now what? I lose it all. No, he chose not to do that. He chose to stay in looking for a city whose builder and maker is God. Going down the corridor. Now, as he's doing that, and it's for a short time, he says, it's for a season. I'd have a little pleasure. Think of, is it Pinocchio or somebody? Anyway, I went to Pleasure Island and Severy. How long do you want to stay in Pleasure Island? How long do you want to stay in Pleasure Island? You don't want to stay in Pleasure Island. Now, Pleasure Island is not so good. No, and I'll give you an illustration, which I used before, but it's there. I think of a Nelson Blount, who was the owner of Ocean Spray Cranberry Sauce. And And you might remember I had lunch with him and all that stuff. And in the process, he shared with me, he said, I used to belong to all these fancy golf clubs and everything, the big things. You have to be somebody to have the privileges. And I gave it all up. I gave it all up. When I came to know the Lord, I quit the whole thing. I didn't want to know. I didn't want any of that. Pleasures of sin for a season. He said, I don't want it. I don't want to be in the system. I don't want to be the king of the bar room. I don't want to be. Now, that's Nelson Bond. Then the dear man, God took him in a plane crash up in New Hampshire. Flew his own plane. Anyway, God knows. God knows history and all the people. Now, so here we are looking. And by faith, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh, choosing rather to suffer the affliction of the people of God rather than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. And that's what he chose to do. Verse 26, esteeming the reproach of Christ, the disgrace, they had no interest, the Egyptian gods, little g, have no interest in God, big G. They have no interest in God. They have no place for God. No, the Athenians had a place, Acts 17. They had a little of all the different idols lined up. They have one place, stone, marked for the unknown God. All the gods, but this one they don't know. And that's where Paul said, this is the God you need to know, the one you don't know. Who's really God? Now, so here, esteeming the reproach, the disgrace, the insult, they had no sense of God, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. They had no sense of whatsoever. So therefore, he's the coming Messiah. And Isaiah 49, Genesis 49, 10, and that there was the family would have known something of the Messiah that was coming. Now, having said that and keeping that in mind, so Moses, did you have a sense? Moses had a sense. And how can we say that? How can we say that? Let's see. Over, if you would please, to John chapter 5. Moses had a wonderful little sense of God, and he chose. So all that he chose is when he was a young man, but there, and all of it was there. He didn't have to, he isn't going to Egypt. He isn't going into the mountains yet for 40 years. He isn't doing that. Nope. It's all settled in his mind, but he has to run because of the Egyptians would be after him. Therefore, chapter 5, verse 46. And you remember, here's Moses. Now, Lord, what did you say? What did Moses? Verse 45. Do not think that I will accuse you to the Father. There is one that accuseth you, even Moses, in whom you trust. For had ye believed Moses, you would have believed me, underline, for he wrote of me. Moses was conscious of me. I was coming. Moses wrote. Moses wasn't stupid. He was there. He knew he was a Hebrew. He had wonderful position, privilege, but he chose. Why? What's so good about Moses? He chose God in the midst of the gods. Now, over to 1 Corinthians and chapter 10. And in 1 Corinthians in chapter 10. And you will note in chapter 10, going directly, if I can, to verse 4. 10:4. And did, verse 3. And did all eat the same spiritual meat? And did all drink the same spiritual drink? For they drank of that spiritual rock that followed them, and that rock was Christ. Moses, what did you do? Where did the water come from? The rock. He spoke to the rock. He hit the rock. The rock is Christ. God provides from the rock. It's no water in the rock. Out of the rock. Christ is the water of life, the bread of life. Now, having said that, Hebrews 11. So Moses, are you conscious? Yes, he is. And you'll notice in verse 26, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures of Egypt. For, do you see the little word for? That gives you a reason, an explanation. Why did he esteem the reproach of Christ greater riches? For reason. He had respect unto the recompense of the reward, the payer in full. God is a payer in full. I don't know about Moses, and I don't know about my work, a job, or the rest of life, how it's going to reward. I'm not interested in that kind of, I may have it. You may get 25 prizes for being something, and you can put them all up on the wall in front of you, and using an illustration that sits in my head at the moment, here's my father's bowling trophies, and he had a pile of them, bowling trophies. And there they were. I remember the long list, bowling trophies. What good are the bowling trophies when you die? What good's the bankroll? What good's anything? You have to leave it, everything. Boom. And never have it again. He said the reward, reproach, the reward, the recompense of the reward. One word, the payer in full. God is a payer in full. Chapter 11, verse 6, Hebrews. But without faith, it's impossible to please him, for he that cometh to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of them that diligently seek him. He is a payer in full. There's your word. It pays off. You can't lose. If you seek me with all your heart, you'll find me. You can't lose in the deal. You can't lose in it. That's faith, without faith. And Hebrews 11, got to quit, but you got the idea so far. What are they doing? God's looking to get, he's honoring people that believe God. They believe God. I believe God's going to help me today in God's will for my life. God's pleased with that. You want God's will for your life. You want things to work out right. God's pleased. Like Enoch pleased God. He walked with God, and God was pleased. See, because we're looking for God. We're in the presence of God to exercise our existence in an earthly way, in an earthly, ordinary way, to enjoy an extraordinary relationship. That's what we're doing. That's what it is to be a believer. By faith, 2 Corinthians 5:7. By faith, you what? By faith, we walk with God. We walk by faith and not by sight. That's what you do. Simple. Who knows it? No one cares. We're back to the Egyptians. You got the idea. Anyway, I hope you got a little bit. Thanks.